Hi, everybody. This is Linda Joy Myers, and we are here with, I am here with Laura Davis to talk about the last topic in our writing conference today, Writing as a Pathway Through Grief and Change. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Please speak up so we can hear you really well. And so I just want to introduce our segment today. As many of you know, we're doing our teleconference a few days ago, and the power went out. So we apologize for that. But I'm so grateful, Laura, that you could be with us today. And we're going to continue talking about memoirs, testimony, and how many themes there are in offering testimony, obviously from the more pleasant stories that we have in our lives to the really tricky ones, which includes writing about our truths. As most of us know, society doesn't tend to support open expressions of grief, and sometimes we find it also very difficult to write about. So let me introduce you, Laura, and be sure and add anything that you would like us all to know about you if I don't include it. Laura Davis is the author of 7 nonfiction books, including The Courage to Heal, Becoming the Parent You Want to Be, and I Thought We'd Never Speak Again. Laura's groundbreaking books have sold more than over a million, almost 2 million copies around the world. Laura has also worked as a columnist, talk show host, radio reporter, blogger, editor, and speaker. And also, Laura, you have some, maybe you can tell us later, but I'd like to leave time for you to talk about your upcoming writing retreats. You offer these around the world, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Well,
I do.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the topic of grief and loss, I've been teaching writing for 30 years and really helping mostly women, sometimes men, to tell their deepest stories. But my mother died about a little more than 4 years ago, and that really motivated me to create a workshop that was more focused specifically on writing as a pathway through grief, loss, uncertainty, and change. And it's a pretty amazing thing to have people come together specifically willing with the goal of writing about those subjects.
I'm sure it is. Because
subjects that are generally very, very taboo and difficult to write. We often would rather write about anything else but those things. Or we write around them. You know, we start writing and then there's like a really painful, difficult scene and we just sort of kind of blip over it. You know, give it a sentence and then move on to something else. But really what we need to do is slow down where it hurts.
I love that. I mean, I think that's so true to invite ourselves to slow down where it hurts. On the subject of slowing down, I just want to mention that you probably heard that Louise DeSalvo, who wrote The Art of Slow Writing, recently died, and she'd also been someone that we spoke to at NAMW, and her whole book, that particular book, is about taking the time and, you know, moving more slowly. So I look forward to what you have to share with us about that.
I brought a little letter. This was a woman named Linda Denton who came to one of my grief writing retreats. And she gave me permission to share this, and it just addresses how difficult it is to write about our grief. I just would like to, I think it's an interesting way to start this.
Great, please do. Thank you.
This is her piece. Okay. Dear grief, I'm sorry I keep missing my appointments with you. The first time we were supposed to meet, I had set my phone alarm for 9 p.m. instead of 9 a.m. You know, that happens for a lot of people who work at night. It was very kind of you to give me one free pass with no charge. Our second scheduled appointment was, again, absolutely my fault. I had forgotten the appointment I had previously made to have my hangnail rechecked. one shouldn't let these medical problems go, and I'm always so good at self-care. I will happily pay you your fee for the missed meeting. Now, about rescheduling. You want to know when would be a good time to see you? Well, it can't be Fridays or Mondays. I'm either preparing for work or recovering from work, and I really wouldn't be up to diving into emotions on days like that. And Saturdays and Sundays are my work days, so those are obviously out. I just can't go to work with puffy eyes and a snotty nose. But don't worry, there are three other days. I'm sure I could fit you in. Let's see. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my days for water aerobics. That chlorine smell really affects my concentration all day, so we'd better rule those days out. So Wednesday it is. Now what time? I like to sleep late and have coffee, so not too early. And I wouldn't want anything to spoil my lunch, so let's say afternoon. You must have time then. Not too soon afternoon. Emotions aren't very good for my digestion. 3 p.m.? Yes, that sounds fine. And let's see, I have about 59 years of grief to process. I think a 30-minute appointment would suffice. You think that's not enough? Well, maybe a follow-up the next week, just to tie up the loose ends.
I love this. That's just the way it is, isn't it?
Can you relate to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. All the ways that we, and it's about writing about grief, but also about significant and important things that we know are going to make us feel a lot, you know, that we can't find that time to write, we can't find that time to face it. So, I mean, the other thing that I'm sure you deal with a lot is this whole, this is our own things that get in the way, but how society or family, I mean, I know as a therapist, I've heard people come and tell me, well, the people at work said, aren't you through grieving yet? And the person had died 6 weeks earlier.
Yeah, we, as a culture, we really don't know how to deal with grief. And we expect people to deal with it alone and, you know, in private. And we don't really understand that, you know, grief that is repressed or hidden or pushed down creates so many incredible problems for us. You know, it cuts off the rest of our feelings. It gets somatized into physical ailments. It limits our capacity for joy because our capacity for joy is directly connected to our capacity to feel our grief.
Right.
And, you know, there are other cultures in the world where people mourn together, where, you know, people come together when there's a death or when there's any kind of loss, and there's a public sharing of that loss. And it makes a huge difference than this expectation that this is something we could just handle on our own and then cover up and continue to function.
Right, exactly.
And it's really when we mourn, when we have that witnessing of our loss and that acknowledgement of our loss, that healing can take place.
Yeah.
And that's why sharing your writing about your losses or your grief is so important. You know, whether you share it at a workshop or with a therapist or with a trusted person, it's important that it doesn't just fester in your notebook, mm-hmm. but that actually there's that exchange of one person sharing the story of what they experience or what they're feeling with another person and having it received. I think it's in that having it received that the grief begins to dissipate and begins to heal.
Well, if we are sharing it and then we get the response, whatever it might be, if it's in a group, maybe silent acknowledgement, or if it's online or with a writing buddy or something, just some simple acknowledgement of, I hear you, I see you, you know, changes our relationship to what we just wrote.
Yeah, it does change it. And there's that, you know, we sometimes forget when we're writers about the witnessing part. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's really, really crucial. And that's why I love to facilitate groups, because in a group we have that experience of a safe container, because, you know, you can share your writing with the wrong person and it can be devastating.
Right.
And sometimes it's someone really close to you, like your spouse, your sister, your brother, your child, your parent, your even a friend, people who are involved in your life, sometimes are not always the best ones to share your writing with, because they'll come back with their opinion. their idea. They're trying to fix it. They're trying to make it better. You know, it didn't really happen that way. You can't say that about mom, you know, or, you know, you're not going to publish that, are you?
Right.
You have to be very careful about who you share with. But when you find that safe person or that safe situation, it's a very precious commodity to have.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm so glad you're doing these things in person. And I've done groups in person. There's just nothing like it, you know, where people are vulnerable, exposed, but also seen and heard. And it's truly something. I love Alice Miller's work, you know, a psychiatrist who talked a lot about witnessing, being witnessed, and also witnessing, realizing that we're also witnessing ourselves or our parts of ourselves when we're writing. You know, we're witnessing the person who lost their mother when they were 5 years old, for instance. We're, as the now narrator, standing back and kind of holding that person. If we are writing on our own, I think it's important to think about that. Well, there are some things that you help people with, some tricks or some techniques for getting the story that's under the story. Can you tell us about those, the way that you help people write about truths that are scary or are difficult to get to?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think some of it is creating an environment that's safe. So, and we could talk more about that later, how people can do that at home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you're writing, sometimes you find that you're, like, skating over the surface or, you know, it's sort of just like this discursive mind that's just rolling out kind of your surface-level thoughts or your kind of chronic anxieties are just spilling out on the page. Kind of, you know, I think of like journal entries that just go on and on and on about, you know, how bad things are, how
right.
bad things are that are very repetitive. And sometimes, you know, that can be valuable. I don't mean to diss journaling at all.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we want to be able to tell the story in a more powerful way, or we want to transform the story. We want to use writing not just to reinforce and repeat the way, the habitual way we've told something, but we actually want to go deeper with the story. So there's some just really simple little prompts that I've given people that are incredibly effective. And one is that when you're, you know, let's say you're doing a timed writing and you feel like you're skating on the surface and you're not really getting into the meat of the subject and you're afraid. Usually it's fear of being exposed or fear of the emotions that might come up, you know, or just like it's terrifying to get close to X topic, you know, or X story or X situation. And one thing you could do is just put the phrase, what I really want to say is.
Mm.
It's just like a little self-prompt right in the middle of your writing, and you could put it in over and over again. It doesn't mean you would keep it in a finish. You know, you might edit it all out. But just that phrase, what I really want to say is. And it's basically you're saying to yourself, cut the crap, you know, tell the truth. You know, don't just tell it the easy way or the comfortable way or the habitual way. Another phrase like that is, now here's the real truth.
Mm.
And, you know, it's really interesting because these prompts are very, very effective. Now here's the real truth. Another one that I've used that is really effective is, now here's the part I never told anyone before.
Ah.
Because, you know, we have our way of, you know, this is what the story is, but, you know, you're talking about something and then there's some detail, you know, about what you were holding in your hand, you know, or, you know, that you stepped in a pile of dog shit on your way to the funeral home, you
uh-huh.
know, or, when you got the call that your mother was dying, you answered 10 emails before you called the airline. You know, just like the way real people are when they're faced with a crisis.
The shame of things that we do.
Mm-hmm. Right, the things we actually, what actually happened, not
right.
like, not our story about a grieving person, like what a grieving person should do, you know,
mm-hmm.
or what a person in a crisis should do, but what real human beings do. So if you tell the real truth,
yeah.
The story suddenly is very believable. You know, I remember I was speaking at the San Miguel Writers Conference maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was right after Wild came out. And Cheryl Strayed was one of the keynote speakers, and I got to have dinner with her one night. And she said that when she wrote Wild, there was this one part that she debated for a really long time whether to include or not.
Oh, yeah, the horse.
It was.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't the horse.
No?
About that story. What the story she told us tonight was there's a moment where she tastes her mother's ashes.
Oh, yeah.
And she said she debated whether to include that or whether not to include it. And I can't publish that. And in the end, she put it in the book, and she said she got more positive feedback on that one sentence.
Wow.
Anything in the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's true. I mean, I did that with my father's ashes before I read her book. You know, was I going to admit that? Or, you know, after my mother died and she was in a little assisted living, and I was alone with her body for a while before my wife and my kids showed up.
Mm.
And I whipped out my iPhone and I took a picture of her corpse.
Yeah.
And that little picture is still on my iPhone roll. I never downloaded it. And now it's been like 4.5 years, and when I scroll through my picture, sometimes I see it.
Mm.
And it's like people do things like this.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't usually talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying everybody does that, but we all have things we do if we really dig into what actually happened. So here's the part I never told anyone before, because that's often the part that is the most painful or the most shameful. It's the part that we can't really face ourselves. So that's a great prompt. Another one, this was given to me by my friend and colleague, Susan Brown, who's a wonderful editor. Who am I kidding anyway? Like, basically, I am so full of shit, and I'm not going to, I'm gonna cut through that, and I'm going to tell the real truth. So these four lines, which seem quite simple, are actually very profoundly powerful.
Right. Well, it gets behind. Yeah, it gets behind the official story, and it gets behind our shame and our vulnerable messiness.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Definitely true.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that there's when we tell, when we get under that story. I find when I write, you know, I'm finishing a memoir now. I'm probably like 80% into writing this book. And there are stories in there, scenes that there's one scene I wrote when I was 16 years old. So like 46 years ago, I wrote the first draft of a story that is now in this memoir.
Wow.
You know, something that happened to me when I was a 10-year-old. And, you know, and then other things, I've written them over and over and over and over and over and over. You know, when I'm with beginner writers, they often think about, you know, oh, I have this many words, you know, I've written this many words, and it's all about the number of words.
Mm.
And I think people don't understand that to craft a really powerful scene, especially about something very challenging to write about, like grief or loss, you know, or these pivotal turning points that we often have to write it many, many, many times.
Yeah, we do.
Different perspectives, mm-hmm. to really get to the truth of the story. And that usually in a first draft you can only get so far.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's so much that's left out.
Yeah.
Another technique I've used and I've taught that I think has been really helpful is to take a draft of something, like if you have a section of something where you feel like you're not deep enough into it, and that there's more that you could say, and you're not getting to it. Or, you know, you just feel like you're kind of describing something and you're not really, really showing it.
Yeah.
Is to take your original sentence and then add 3 new sentences, and then take the second original sentence and write 3 new sentences or phrases, and to do it very mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it as an exercise, it's actually really interesting because these other layers start appearing in the piece. You get much more of the kind of the inner monologue of the character. You get more of the backstory of the character. You get more description, more sensory detail, because you're forcing yourself to expand what it is, your first draft. What you
think. You're going past the gates.
Definitely past the gate. That's right.
You know, the gates that we put up. Well, So we'll get to some five writing prompts in just a minute, and I think those are important for us to share, even though people will be doing them on their own here. But first, we are talking about vulnerability and messiness and writing the difficult things. So, you know, how do you help people take care of themselves when they're doing, obviously they're doing, choosing to write to heal, choosing to face these things? What can help them do it and keep doing it, not just do it once and then stop?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it is setting. You know, so if I'm running a workshop, I have control over the setting. You know, so I have a schedule so that people know that sessions begin and end at a certain time, and I stick to that schedule. So that creates a feeling of safety. Or mm-hmm. sometimes doing a timed writing exercise, like, okay, we're going to write for 20 minutes, or, you know, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you're at home, you could say, I'm going to write for half an hour. Especially if it's a if it's a really difficult topic, maybe it's like, I'm going to set a timer for 10 minutes.
Right.
Because 10 minutes seems bearable, mm-hmm. you know, and if you know there's an end to your writing, it's less terrifying to approach it. So I think I think timed writings can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, you know, just do another one and another one if you want to keep writing. But knowing there's an end point, and at home you could create a container by when you're going to write something like this that you know is going to be very challenging, that you don't sandwich that in between, you know, picking your kids up at school, having to leave for work, you know, any kind of obligation, but you create mm-hmm. space around it
mm-hmm.
so that you can, I like to do some kind of ritual when I'm about to write something like this. It could be, you know, I'm writing this memoir about my mother and me, and I have, looking right now, I have a really nice picture of the two of us in a frame on a little stand with a cloth, and I have a heart made of glass, and I have a candle that I light, and I wrote a little prayer for my book one day, and I sometimes I read that little prayer before I sit down to write. So I have like a whole little ritual I do that helps me get in the space. And just because I have an office and a place where I really work on this particular book, when I'm sitting in the chair I bought for my mother a few weeks before she died.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Recliner, and mm-hmm. then she died, and I sit in that chair to write. And so when I sit there, it's like I'm taking on the mantle, and I feel like I have her blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's for me, that's my ritual. And I've done different things for different projects, and each person would have to figure this out for themselves. But I think the main thing is having time and space around it so that you have time to drop in and that you have adequate time to write. You know, if you only have 20 minutes between things, it's not the time to tackle the most difficult scene you have to write.
Right.
You know, that should be when you have a whole day or you mm-hmm. go to a writer's work weekend, 3 days where people could just dive into whatever they wanted to work on, you know, with a little support around the edges, you know, or, you know, to go somewhere for a weekend where you're just going to write, you know, or to have a place where you could close the door, have no interruptions, have your Wi-Fi turned off on your computer, mm-hmm. have your phone out of the room, you know, where you're just creating a container where you know you could dive in without being interrupted, and that at the end, if it is really upsetting or emotional, that you have time to take a walk, you know, or to do whatever it is that will ground you afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
gardening.
Writing about the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Gardening, walking your pet.
Gardening, absolutely. Well, yeah, petting your dog, you know, whatever. And the other thing is that, you know, you need to have support in your life. Like, when I began working on this book much more seriously, which was about 4 years ago, I got myself back into therapy. And I've been seeing a therapist the whole time I've been writing this because it has brought so much up for me.
Yeah.
I'm writing about the most primal relationship in my life, and I'm trying to tell more of the truth. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to get beneath my own habitual story of, you know, this is who I was, this is who she was, this
mm-hmm.
this is what happened. Well, I'm finding out that a lot of what I thought happened, you know, it was just my own belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I've needed support to be able to face that. So
right.
for each person it will be different. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's really important that if you're tackling something where you think there's a prospect of a lot of painful feelings and old memories surfacing, that you don't do it in a vacuum, that you have your support system lined up ahead of time.
And I think it helps if there's a, if you know, a mentor or a writing coach who understands the psychology of this kind of writing, that that can be helpful too, you know, because you're not just writing, you're excavating. You know.
Definitely excavating, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's
there also, you know, there's I hand people a list of prompts at these workshops that are, you know, there's all the prompts you would expect, something like, you know, I don't forgive, or, you know, the first time I felt ashamed, or these kind of, you know, there are, or you could have prompts that are particularly targeted towards whatever the issue is for you. You know, I've had people write for a month every day, the day my mother died. They write that same prompt every day.
Oh.
Day they, there's more that could come up. But it's also important to have things like, you know, what gives me strength, or the ground on which I stand, and to have prompts that also help build our strength and remind us of our solidity, because that's part of self-care.
So what are some other prompts that you have? Those are good. I'm writing these down too while you're talking.
Well, you know, I think like before entering into something like this, it'd be really good to have a self-care plan in place,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and you should know what you're going to do for self-care before you need it.
Right.
So, you know, if I start writing this piece and I feel overwhelmed with grief, you know, or my despair comes back, or if I start feeling really depressed, to know what you're going to do. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are times, you know, when I have a retreat that's focused on having people write about grief, you know, everybody gets screened before they come to that retreat, because I want to make sure that being in a group and writing about those kind of topics is something that this person could psychologically handle, and that it's not going to be too overwhelming for them.
So you interview them and find out where they're at with everything?
Yeah, well, they have to fill out a form. For that particular retreat, people have to fill out a form and where I could kind of assess where they are at this point in their life. And
right.
what kind of support they have, and
okay.
what kind of self-care they have in place already. Because I don't want someone to come to a workshop and have a ton of things open up and then go home to a life where they have no support.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That would feel really useful.
Yeah, that's very ethical, too, and very positive, that people know that you're taking care of them in that way, too, by knowing these things and setting it up properly.
Yeah.
So, good. I mean, I think all this...
You know, the other thing I use a lot is I use poetry a lot. You know?
So how do you use it?
A poem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I would read a poem. I'm trying to think of one. Like here's something that I've read many times. This is a prompt that I'd like to give called I Don't Remember. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, people, I teach a whole workshop called How to Write About What You Can't Remember, and one of the ways is to use that prompt, I don't remember. So this is an example that I have read many times, and this is from a colleague of mine, and this was about her father. Ira, our father, God of my infancy. What I remember of him is gleaned from a handful of photos that prove he existed. I don't remember the sound of his voice. I don't remember him offering me a drink of water or a bite of his sandwich. I don't remember playing card games with him. I don't remember licking ice cream cones in the East Coast summer heat or watching the first snowflakes fall in October. I don't remember ever celebrating his birthday or mine, though there are family photos of these occasions. I don't remember being at the beach with him or diving under waves together. I don't remember if he liked to read books, and if he did, I don't remember what kind. I don't remember him reading me a bedtime story. I don't remember if we shared my passion for chocolate. I don't remember the feel of his skin, the smell of his breath, or the size of his hands and feet. I don't remember if we laughed together or if he comforted me when I cried. I don't know if he was proud of me or secretly ashamed, because during the last 3 years of his life, I grew sullen and overweight, dark and withdrawn, for what the family called no apparent reason. But most of all, I don't remember if his heart welled up at the sight of me, his only daughter. I don't remember if he loved me.
Well,
so, you know, I would read something like that as an example, and then, you know, then the prompt is, okay, I don't remember, 10 minutes, go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you could often use other people's writing, you know, or poems,
right,
or, you know, little vignettes as jumping off places,
mm-hmm,
to write your own version. And, you know, I often find, and I'm sure most of the people listening to this have been in writing groups where one person's courage to write about something, you know, opens the door for everyone else in the room to write about that subject. You know, the first time someone writes a piece that has sex in it, then suddenly, oh, we could write about sex or money, you know, or grief or shame or, you know, I remember one day, this was just a weekly class I teach where a lot of the students have been there for a long time, and one woman came in and wrote about her son who's a heroin addict.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time we wrote, two more people in the group wrote about relatives who were heroin addicts. You know, it was like that topic had never been broached. And as soon as one person, you know, had the courage to do it, suddenly,
mm-hmm,
this topic was available.
It broke past the shame, you know, and the silencing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We have time for a few more prompt ideas. Do you have some more available?
Yeah, I do have some other ones.
Okay.
Okay. So here's a few that are focused more on the theme of grief.
Mm-hmm.
One is, tell me about the things you've lost.
Mm.
And that's a very open-ended prompt because, you know, you could write about, you know, your favorite purple jacket that you left, you know, somewhere after a yoga class and you never retrieved, and you always think about that jacket. You could, you know, you could talk about, I've lost my memory. You could write about that. You could talk about the teeth you've lost. You could talk about your home that burnt down. You could talk about the people who have died. You could talk about your self-confidence, your belief in yourself. You could talk about your faith in democracy. I mean, you could just go anywhere with that prompt. So I like things that are quite open-ended. And what's really fun is if you're doing this with other people, even one other person, but if you have a group of four writers or six writers or a dozen, everyone writes something so different.
Right.
And then when you get to hear it, it's like it just cracks open the world. So that's one. Tell me about the things you've lost. One that's really good for someone facing change or uncertainty is, I'm standing on the edge of.
Ooh.
You just keep using that as a repeating line. I'm standing, mm-hmm, on the edge of a cliff. I'm standing on the edge of old age. I'm standing on the edge of accepting the fact that my marriage is over. You know, I'm standing on the edge of madness. I'm standing on the edge of a binge. You know, whatever it is for someone. So that's, and again, you could just keep going in different directions, and it's the kind of prompt you could use over and over and over again. And, you know, 6 months later, you'd write something really different. Third one that I really like is, when I drop my story. When I drop my story. You know, basically, when I step out from the persona of who I want people to think I am, and who I want to think I am, when I drop my story, it's like that other one. Here's the real truth. You know, this is the part I don't tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I drop my story, fourth one is the yes of a broken heart. The yes of a broken heart. So that's really, you know, often when we are losing the most, there's that place where we have to deeply surrender. Sometimes there is joy or beauty or I hate to say the word reward, but it's often not in the middle of that bleakest place when we really let go. We often are really in touch with the beauty of the world. You know?
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of thinking about when I had babies, you know, I had a newborn baby, and then going out in the world, and it's like, why, everything looked alive. everything looked, every tree, every sounds were louder, you know. Or if you, I remember leaving after my mother was cremated, my brother and I sat and watched our mother's cremation. We sat in this little room in this crematory with our knees facing each other, like 2 inches away from this roaring furnace.
Mm.
We sat there for like the 3.5 hours where our mother burned.
Wow.
And I remember it was an amazing experience. It's a scene I wrote in my book. And then afterwards we walked out, and it was like, how could the world be going on the same? Like, how could people be caught up in these petty concerns? And everything, my senses were so alive.
Right.
So I think, you know, at these times when we feel the most, and even if it's the most painful,
mm-hmm.
we often are the most alive.
Yeah.
So we're not numb. We're not in the trance that we are in most of our daily lives.
Well, like you said, in order to experience the positive, the joy, the insight, the aha, all of that, we have to go past the gate of having locked it and blocked it all off, and then we walk into another state of being. And the thing of it is, we don't know we're going to get there until we try. We may not get there, but we will never get there if we don't try. That's interesting to me.
It takes people years to get to the stories they really need to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've watched that as a teacher. Sometimes if I work with a student over a really, you know, over a period of years, I could tell, you know, I guess from being a teacher for a long time, and also I'm pretty intuitive,
mm-hmm.
and I think I read people well, that there's something they're writing, but there's like something they're not getting to yet. And sometimes they might be sitting in my class every week for 2 years or 3 years, and then one day they come in and they write that thing, that one piece that they have not been able to write before.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's just like such a profound moment when that happens.
I love that when that happens. A little bit of the magic, or somehow a key went into a lock, you know.
Right.
And we can never predict when that will happen, but if we don't go into the writing, then it doesn't happen. Or at least it doesn't happen the way we might wish. Yeah, these are all,
you know,
so
the seeds are planted late. You know, someone might not have their breakthrough in the class or in the workshop, but a
mm-hmm.
seed is planted, and down the line you think, oh, that's what that was about. That's
yeah.
what that poem was about.
Right.
You know? That's what they were talking about, you know.
Yes. Yes, that's the aha.
The last prompt I wrote down was just, what gives me strength?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great prompt to use to fortify you when you're doing this really hard excavating work.
Yes, the fortification.
You know, it's interesting. The other thing that I find interesting is that you can write a first draft of something and kind of get the facts and the story out, and then as you begin to craft it more into a story, and you start to add more texture, more sounds, more, you know, smells, more thoughts, you know, the contrast between what you're saying on the outside, what you're really thinking on the inside, you often can begin to transform the experience. And, you know, sometimes I will have people do something like, if it's a really traumatic experience, to write it from someone else's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've given people the assignment to, let's say there was a lot of violence in their family or something, like, tell the story of your family from the point of view of the kitchen table.
Oh.
If you write from the point of view of an object, there's not all the filters, and, you know, the table just sees and witnesses everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or write about it from the point of view of a bystander.
Right.
You know, or the pediatrician, or the sibling, or the, you know, the grandmother, and to just, and even the perpetrator, but just to really explore the point of view of all the people who were witnessing that. And another exercise I did that was really helpful for me personally was to rewrite my childhood history, and to bring in an ally that wasn't there. You know, and I had an identical twin who died.
Mm.
So I brought her in, and in my imagination, she became my guardian angel. And then I rewrote some of the worst experiences that I had growing up as if she was there. And it was fiction, you know. I mean, I was creating fiction, but I felt like I was also, like, creating these new neural pathways in my brain.
Right.
That changed my relationship to those experiences.
Mm-hmm. It will. Right. Exactly. Well, this is really wonderful and really helpful, and I know that, I mean, I took a lot of notes. I really love what you're saying, and we've done similar kinds of work. You know, I'm a therapist, so I'll take people down those paths if they'll go. You know, these are, you know, writing about grief, facing change, and there's so much of it. It seems like all the time now there's something else to adjust to learn about, to deal with. And so I think that using our writing as a way of exploring, as a way of self-support, as a way of healing is you know, is really, really important. So, Laura, you have some workshops coming up. Would you like to tell us about them before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I would love to. Well, for one, on my website, lauradavis.net, I send out weekly writing prompts. And some of them are on these topics and some of them are on other topics.
Mm-hmm.
But you can receive those. They're free. And then there's like an online space where people can post their answers. So that's one thing. That's at lauradavis.net.
Uh-huh.
I do take people traveling. I've done these trips for a number of years called Write, Travel, Transform. I've gone to Bali like 5 times. I've taken people to Scotland, to Greece, to Vietnam, and to Peru. And I have, right now I only have one more of these trips on the books because I'm really focusing more on my own writing. And I'm taking a group back to the Sacred Valley of Peru and to Machu Picchu next May.
Uh-huh.
And I did this trip a little more than a year ago. And I went with my wife, who's a yoga teacher. So we had yoga in the morning. And then we would have 2 or 3 hours a day of a writing workshop. When I'm traveling, I'm not focused on grief. You know, we did a lot of travel writing, and we did a lot of things to really help people have a great record of their travel and to really integrate what they're experiencing on the page with their creativity. And then, you know, in the afternoons, we do things like we visit a school, and we go hiking, and we go to archaeological sites, and just do a really go to markets and do these incredible excursions a lot in nature. And we had, you know, a shaman came and did rituals with us and have wonderful food. And so it's like a vacation that also has this very grounding element of something for your writing life, your creativity. And because of that, the group becomes a very tight community. So I that's going to be my last one of these trips for quite a while. And there's still space available, and I wanted to tell everybody out there about it.
Great.
Go to it at lauradavis.net and then just /Peru.
Wonderful.
It will be May 13th to 28th. And there's an add-on if people want to go to the Amazon, if they can. And
oh, my goodness.
I also invite people if they want to bring, they could bring a spouse who is not a writer.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. Well, you know, I'm sure that's be a mind-blowing and life-changing opportunity, but I do get your writing prompts in your newsletter, and they're really nice to receive through email, so I hope people do sign up for that. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate your time and these inspiring writing prompts and ideas for writing the truth, writing the story of loss and grief and change, and blessings to you, and I'll be seeing you on the internet.
Okay, thanks so much. I'm sorry we didn't get to take calls today, but
me too.
Got to do it anyway.
Yes, I'm glad that we have your program here with us, so thank you again so much. All right, bye-bye. Take good care.
Okay, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.